Good morning. I'd like to call the State Affairs and State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee to order. Would you please call the roll?
Chair Stevenson?
Here.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Here.
Ranking Member Golf Marcio? Representatives Barrero?
Here.
Campbell? Dugan?
Here.
Fabricio?
Here.
Fisher, excuse. Gilombardo? Henson?
Here.
McCurdy?
Here.
Hillebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf? Robinson?
Here.
Sabatini? We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Please remember to silence your communication devices. Okay, good morning, members. First up, we will have Chair Clemens with House Bill 749, Fraud Prevention. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, good morning to everyone on this Gator Day in the Capitol. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill, which comprises the Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patronis' Fraud Protection Package. There are several key components to this bill that are very, very good for the consumer. And the first one is ensuring, and pay close attention to this because I think that it'll be applicable, assuring that when you sign up for a service contract, we've all done it, that you can cancel that service contract in the same manner from which you signed up. How many of us have signed up for something that took an act of Congress or more to unsign up and you had to wait on hold for 45 minutes to talk to the next person? This bill eliminates that encumbrance. It also increases fines for unlicensed public adjusters practicing during declared states of emergency. Most of our vulnerable folks that get scammed or shammed is during those times of emergency, and it increases the fines for those situations. This bill ensures that customers can attach their vehicle registration and insurance information to the new digital driver's license systems that the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles is rolling out very soon. So that, think about you get a text or an email because your insurance is tied to your driver's license, and it prevent people from going perhaps long periods of time without insurance because they get that notification from the DMV. It reduces the frequency of warranty advertisements by requiring solicitations from licensed warranty insurance agents to include verifiable information. So at the beginning, they must state their name and their company license number at the beginning or the end of the solicitation to separate the legitimate ones from those ones who call you 10 times a day, if you could just buy that warranty. It reduces the frequency it provides incentives for insurers to invest in fraud prevention, in the detection of fraud, and other investigative services activities. In general, that's the bill, Madam Chair, and I'm sure we'll get into questions.
Thank you, Representative Clemens. I believe you have an amendment. You're recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is an amendment, and this amendment provides for the appropriation to the bill. There was a $1.4 million one-time setup, and the amendment provides the $1.4 million, which will give consumers the ability to digital display their vehicle registration, and it's coming from internal funds.
Thank you. And I want to make a note here. This barcode for this amendment is 633193. Are there questions on the amendment? Seeing none, is there public testimony? Oh, Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm just trying to understand, are we talking about the contract fraud prevention, or are we talking about vehicle? I just got a little confused right there. Can I get an explanation?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Henson. This is an omnibus bill from the Jimmy Patronis, our Chief Financial Officer. Each year he puts forth a bill that has a multiple sub subjects inside there, and they packaged it all together as the new fraud prevention bill. So this one has the four pillars that I had mentioned earlier with the various subdivisions in there that helps protect people and citizens of Florida from fraud in the various capacities. Did that help?
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, there is public testimony on the bill. Tasha Carter, Office of Insurance Consumer Advocate. Tasha, waves in support. Thank you for being here today. And Garcia Reginald from Florida Justice Association. Waves in support. Austin Stowers, waves in support, representing CFO Jimmy Patronis. And that concludes public testimony. Is there debate on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment say yay.
Yay.
All opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Are there questions? Seeing none, public testimony? No additional. Is there debate? Well, certainly a wonderful bill, Chair Clemens. These are all things that we have seen affect our consumers in Florida, and I appreciate the CFO bringing it, and you also hearing the bill and advocating to prevent fraud in the state of Florida. Representative Clemens, you are recognized to close on.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members.
Yes, for HB 749.
Florida being the third largest state in the nation, and with the number of folks that are over 55 years old, makes us ripe for people who would like to victimize the citizens of Florida. And a shout out to two folks, Jimmy Patronis, our CFO, who is working diligently to try to push back on all of the people that would purport fraud on the citizens of Florida, and Tasha Carter. She's here, but I want to give her a shout out. She is at the front line of always standing up against those who would commit fraud and helping us pass laws that help protect innocent people. And with that, I would ask your favorable support on this very good bill.
Thank you. Michelle, will you call the roll on CS for House Bill 749?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Golf Marcel? Representatives Barrero? Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher? Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
12 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, this bill will be reported favorably.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. I hope you have a good day. Next, we have CS for House Bill 389, Money Service Businesses, by Representative Zika. You are recognized.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Stevenson, Vice Chair Maggard, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present PCS for House Bill 389, Money Services Businesses. Members, the subject legislation is a legislative priority for the Office of Financial Regulation. Last year, the Federal Bureau of Investigations informed the Office of Financial Regulation it found the definitions in Chapter 560 for responsible person and control of a money services business to be overly broad. PCS for House Bill 389 updates the definition of responsible person and control of a money services business in Chapter 560. Furthermore, the subject legislation will also address FBI's concerns by repealing the definition of a responsible person and removing the term entirely from the statute, proposing a new term, control person, which is more narrowly tailored to meet the FBI's request, and incorporate the new control person term throughout the chapter. Members, this is an important legislation for the Office of Financial Regulation, and that is the bill, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zika. I believe you have an amendment, barcode 191619.
I do.
You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Members, what the subject amendment does two things. The amendment removes the fiscal impact of the bill by restoring current law relating to an application for change of control of a money service business. And the second piece is it further clarifies the fingerprint provisions for money services business. That is the amendment, Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions on the amendment? Seeing none, there's no public testimony on the amendment. Is there debate on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment say yay. Yay. All opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there questions? Questions on the bill? Seeing none, there is public testimony on the bill. Russell Weigel, Office of Financial Regulation, waives in support. Is there debate on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Zika, you are recognized to close on CS for House Bill 389.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I just want to take just a quick moment and just really recognize the staff and the OFR team for really working together on this important piece of legislation. And I just ask for your favorable support. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. Michelle, will you call the roll on the bill?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Goff-Marcio?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero? Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher? Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
13 yays, 0 nays.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, the bill is reported favorably.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Representative Smith with CS for House Bill 719, Swim Up Bars. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And yes, the bill sounds exactly what it is. CS for HB 719 tasks the Florida Building Commission to promulgate rules to safely build swim-up pool bars in Florida. Yes, it's hard to believe, as a top tourist destination, that's an amenity we don't currently have in Florida. And this bill would provide those rules for the pool industry to be able to build that and offer it. And once that construction would take place, then the bill also tasks the Department of Health to regulate those pools. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Is there, you have no amendments?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Are there questions, members? Do we have questions on the bill? Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and sorry, I just like to know stuff. So swimming pools and a bar and intoxicated people. I'm just wondering, how do we caution or prepare or plan around the safety risks of an intoxicated person in a swimming pool?
Thank you, Representative Henson. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Well, the bill doesn't specifically address that. However, it does address signage and the operations lifeguard on duty. Those things are called out in the bill. So I think there's reasonable precautions put in place. And we do have, no matter what establishment in Florida that serves alcohol, there are procedures in place so people are not overserved.
I see no additional questions. We do have public testimony. Chris Dawson, Martin Aquatic Design Engineering, waiving in support. We also have Samantha Paget from Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. And she waives in support. So, okay. We have a question. Do you want to maybe pick that up in debate? We've kind of moved past questions. But there'll be time. So, That, so public testimony, debate, would maybe you can introduce your concern in the form of debate. Representative Campbell, you're recognized. You're recognized.
Well, thank you, Chair. Let me just figure out how I want to rephrase my question in debate format. I guess my curiosity would be is just if there are other agencies that are involved in overseeing these regulations, that's what my concern would be, is what agencies would be over the regulations, and just making sure that it's not just one agency.
Thank you. Is there any other debate? Seeing no other yes, Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Colonel, I can't think of, I'm sorry, Representative Smith, I can't think of any better person to land a amphibious assault on bars across the entire state of Florida, coming from a lot of experience that you've had on leave throughout the world. I'm sure that you'll be a fine purveyor and a consultant as we move forward, and I'll be gladly supporting this bill.
Thank you. Representative Henson, in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is hard to believe that the number one destination in the country is Florida and we don't have any swim-up bars. Thank you.
Thank you. I see any additional debate. I thank you for presenting it. It's a unique subject. And if you're able to provide Representative Campbell some information in your close or at another time, I'd greatly appreciate it. But thank you for presenting this bill. We certainly want to keep our visitors and residents safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And in closing, that is exactly what the bill seeks to do, is offer an amenity in Florida that we know it's in the Caribbean. People have been to Puerto Rico, go to Las Vegas, other destinations. They have this amenity, and the pool industry will be working with the bill specifically tasked the Florida Building Commission to work with the pool industry so they can use their expertise to safely build these pools and take everything into consideration, and then following subsequently that the Department of Health, because I think we all know exactly what went through our minds the first time we heard alcohol and people, you know, nobody wants to be sitting on a bar stool in the water for 3 hours and they never get out of the water, you know, I'm just saying. So I think that's being addressed in this bill, and I think we can certainly do it safely here in Florida, and I'd ask for your favorable support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Michelle, will you call the roll on the bill, please?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Goff Marcia?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero? Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher? Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
13 yeas, zero nays.
Members, by your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Representative LaMarca, you are recognized to present CS for House Bill 529, Yacht and Ship Brokers Located Out of State.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members of this committee. We're going from swim-up bars and pools to yachts, so there's a theme. There are several areas in the statute that are either outdated or leave room for potential bad actors to engage. Although there's a desire to make some change, several areas of the statute today, we're going to focus on the expanding the economic impact of an industry that is one of Florida's most significant and to maintain Florida's reputation as the boating capital of the world. This bill simply allows out-of-state brokers to legally conduct business in Florida. There's no reason to prevent this practice as long as they're coordinating their efforts with a licensed Florida salesperson or broker, and that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative LaMarca. Are there any amendments on the bill? Seeing none, are there questions? Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And just have one question. I guess I have two questions. The first question would be, how does this affect Florida yacht brokers, for one, and then a second part of that question would be, in other states, are they, is it open to brokers across state?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. To the second question first, I'm not, the bill doesn't deal with other states, interstate commerce the other way. I can get that answer for you. But the first question that you had, this would allow transactions that may come to a yacht that's in Florida. If that transaction wasn't going to happen because the broker was out of state, this will allow them to actually create additional business.
Did that answer your question, Representative Robinson?
Not quite. I guess because I'm saying, so I guess I'm looking for the economic impact on the Florida broker. Does it help them or does it hurt them, basically?
Representative Marker, you want to take a...
Thank you, Chair. I guess the answer to that would be it would increase the economic opportunity for additional sales that may not happen with just the market that's here now.
Are there any other questions? Representative Campbell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Hey, Representative, how you doing?
Great.
My question is, currently now, how does the rule state for individuals to buy a yacht currently?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. To the representative from the Venice of Florida, the yachting capital of the world, from Fort Lauderdale, Representative Campbell. Currently, right now, there's a restriction for an out-of-state broker to be able to purchase. To be involved in a sale unless they're this would allow them to do it with a licensed salesperson or broker in Florida. Quite frankly, this bill should also include some other things that we sketched out early on, but it's very narrow focused for this session, and we'll hopefully take a stab at some other areas. But as you know, it's a huge economic impact for our community back there, about $8 billion industry, and the boat show itself is about 3 Super Bowls. So as we watched one last Sunday, they can have 3 of those before they hit the impact of our Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show. Sorry for the advertisement.
You have a follow-up?
Thank you, Chair. So this bill will allow, take out the broker and allow them to purchase it themselves, correct? If I'm understanding correctly.
You're recognized?
Thank you, Chair. No, this would just allow out-of-state brokers to engage in a transaction with an in-state Florida broker.
Okay.
So come bring the business here and create an additional opportunity.
Okay, seeing no further questions, we have no public testimony. Didn't miss any, okay. Debate, we're on to debate on the bill. Well, thank you for bringing... Okay, Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
Just wanted to say this is a very interesting bill. After you get me my question, you're going through some questions, I think I understand a little bit, but I would like to know or speak with you later on what else you all are trying to do with it to see those other things that you said were kind of scaled out. Because as you stated, this is a big industry, especially in South Florida.
Thank you. Any other debate? I will say thank you for bringing this bill. I have used a broker before to sell boats, and it is an international market. It's at least multi-state market. And the boat that I was dealing with had come from Europe. And so it's really important that they have the ability to work with each other. And I didn't know this was perhaps an obstacle that might expand the market, because when you want to sell a boat, you want to find a buyer, right? A yacht, you want to find a buyer. So Representative LaMarca, you are recognized to close on House Bill 529.
Thank you, Chair. And in the absence of having Captain Lee here from below deck to close, I'll just wave close.
Thank you. Representative Michelle, will you please call the roll on the bill?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Golf Marcel?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero? Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher? Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf? Robinson?
Yes.
Sabatini? Yes. 13 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, we'll show this bill reported favorably. Representative G. Lombardo, there you go. You are recognized to present House Bill 1443. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. This bill is DMS's state group insurance bill, and this bill just clarifies the language and allows them to collect documentation for the group insurance eligibility, and that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative G. Lombardo. Are there questions on the amendment? I'm sorry. Oh, excuse me. Yes, Representative G. Lombardo, you have an amendment?
Yes, Chair. And all the amendment does is just align the date, the effective date up with the fiscal year.
This is amendment barcode 455611. Are there questions on the amendment? Seeing none, is there public testimony on the amendment? We have none. Is there debate on the amendment? Okay. All in favor of the amendment say yay. Yay. All opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there questions? Representative McCurdy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Good morning, Representative G. Lombardo. My first question is, why does the bill move the authority to contract with the dependent eligibility verification vendor from from the Division of State Group Insurance to DMS?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So what this bill does currently, they're required to contract with an external, and now that's just bringing it everything in-house. So it allows them to actually do the verification eligibility within the agency.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. All right, Representative, could you explain the rationale and the practical impact of the change? When I was reading the bill, to me, it looked like we were switching authority from one agency to another.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So I have the DMS folks that come up here, and they'll kind of explain some of the more details. Okay.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really quickly, so Division of State Group Insurance is a division within the Department of Management Services, so it's already within the same agency. This is allowing us to have these services potentially ran by another division. So People First is actually responsible, which is another division within Department of Management Services, is actually responsible for administering this right now. So it's actually part of our outsourced contract, so this is cleaning up that authority.
Thank you. And Mr. Cox, if you could please sign.
I'm so sorry. Yes, yeah, no, I'm sorry. Jimmy
no, but
Cox.
I very much appreciate it. Jimmy, just go ahead and identify yourself.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. Sorry. So Jimmy Cox, I'm the Director of People First at Department of Management Services.
And if you could just finish the paperwork, that would be great. Okay.
Yes, we will.
All right. Thank you for being here to answer that question. Go ahead. Representative Robinson.
Thank you. I guess I want to ask, you know, was there a the way that it's set up now, was there a problem with, you know, this procurement or, you know, this current oversight?
You're recognized.
No, ma'am, there was not a problem. The original language put in 2017 to do a specific procurement for a complete dependent audit. So since that time, we've continued an ongoing audit, which has nothing to do with that original procurement. So it's cleaning up that language and continuing the authority.
Okay. Is there any other questions? Representative Campbell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, how much did the state pay the vendor to conduct this audit?
You're recognized.
The original audit? Yeah, the original audit was $1 million in funding for the original audit back in 2017.
Representative McCurdy.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. We still have a vendor performing eligibility verification currently?
You're recognized.
So any new dependents, any new dependent that gets added to coverage, the subscriber has to provide documentation proving eligibility. So you have to prove that your wife is your wife, right? So that's the best example, probably, or one example.
Representative Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. When will the contract for the vendor be competitively re-procured?
You're recognized.
At this time, there's not a set date to re-procure. It's part of a larger contract for People First. So People First is the state's human resource information system, and there's a supporting service center that goes along with that. So that contract runs through August 20th of 2026. There's activities ongoing to re-procure that entire service, but it's a lot more than just dependent eligibility verification.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cox. I appreciate you being here and the questions. So we initially had an audit to kind of clean everything up. You've been doing work ongoing.
Yes,
and periodically you do another full audit to see that the dependents are authorized?
No, ma'am. So currently what we do is only new dependents that are added to coverage go through the verification process. We don't have funding or it's not included in our current contract with our vendor to do a full audit. Mm-hmm. That would be to the question that Representative Campbell had.
Okay.
That would be a separate procurement. That would be a separate funding request as well.
So this just cleans up the language to reflect what you're currently doing?
Yes, ma'am.
I got it. All right. Good. Is there, okay, any more questions? We got them. Is there, Representative Goff-Marcel, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here to answer our questions. Under current law, it stipulates that the compensation for the eligibility verification contractor may not exceed the claims cost for the prior 12 months for the dependent populations disenrolled as a result of the contractor services. However, lines 21 through 24 of your bill, of the bill, eliminates that requirement for the contract. Why did that get taken out?
Do you have the bill before you?
I do, but I don't know if I understood the question, to be honest.
Do you want to clarify?
Let me see if I can clarify that. Okay, so I guess I'll back up a little bit. What was the results of the original dependent eligibility verification in 2018? More specifically, how many ineligible dependents were identified and how much did the state save by removing them from the coverage in the SGI program?
Do you have that information with you?
I can answer part of it.
Thank you.
Okay. So I don't have the number of dependents that were actually removed from coverage, but the savings was estimated at $20
million. Wow, that's, yeah. Wow. Okay. And then may I follow up on that? Thank you, Madam Chair. So now under current law, the compensation for the eligibility verification contractor may not exceed the claims cost for the prior 12 months for the dependent populations disenrolled as a result of the contractor services. And then in lines 21 through 24, it eliminates that requirement for the contract. Why is that?
Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So that original language was tied to the full audit and was limiting the cost that the department could expend on that initial full audit. The ongoing audit is part of our, I think I mentioned this a while ago, it's part of our People First contract, so it's a larger contract. Our estimated savings right now from that effort, we started it back in July of 2020, is $10 million. We pay $175,000 a year for that service.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions on the bill, is public testimony? I guess we'll have your card for public testimony. I appreciate you being here to answer those questions. Is there debate on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Gilombardo, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I ask for your favorable support, and I'll just wave close.
Michelle, please call the roll on House Bill 1443.
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Goff-Marcel?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero? Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan? Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher? Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
12 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. Thank you, members. By your vote, we'll show House Bill 1443 reported favorably with committee substitute. Now, last but not least, we have Representative Rodriguez presenting House Bill CS for House Bill 529, Yacht and Ship Brokers. Oh, beg your pardon. House Bill 619, United States Produced Iron and Steel in Public Works Projects. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. House Bill 619 is titled United States Produced Iron and Steel in Public Works Projects, also known as my Buy American Bill. Buy American provisions help strengthen the economy, create new jobs, and promote responsible environmental practices. Florida taxpayer-funded projects should give support for American companies and workers who continue to manufacture and keep jobs here at home. We as a state and taxpayers should not reward companies who move their operation dollars and jobs to foreign countries such as communist China. We have also included waivers similar to the federal guidelines to ensure cost effectiveness, amongst others. Buy American law creates demand for domestically produced goods, helping to sustain and grow domestic manufacturing and the millions of jobs it supports. And that, Madam Chair, is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Rodriguez. I see no amendments. Members, are there questions on the bill? Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Senator Rodriguez, thank you so much for the bill. Appreciate it. Wanted to ask you, I had a couple municipalities stop in. They do some wastewater, other kind of water work, and they were talking about the fact that they can't necessarily get gauges that would be great for their municipality within the U.S., and they're not of a standard that they would appreciate. So how could, say, a municipality deal with purchasing gauges outside of the U.S. and under your bill? Thank you.
Recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for that question. So we've enlisted three waivers in this bill, two of which will speak to your question. And basically that is, if there's no availability, the quantity or quality of the product is not sufficient, then they could go elsewhere. And then also, if it's not in the public's best interest, they can also go elsewhere. So either one of those waivers, I think, could apply to that in order to suffice that demand.
Any other questions? Representative Fabricio, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Rodriguez. I see lines 57 through 58 talk about the three conditions that you can be used to opt out, but I don't see that it's clear enough. I will be up on this bill today, without a doubt, but I think there's some things that maybe I'd like to speak with you afterwards to just clarify, to make sure that we don't jam up the economy a little bit here. Thank you.
Fair enough.
Thank you. Would you like to respond to the question?
I think that was more of a debate, but sure.
I think there was a question
sure.
on
so the question
lack
is,
of clarity.
Am I willing to work with you? Absolutely, Representative, not only your colleague, but a friend, so I'm absolutely willing to work with you and better this bill.
I think there's also a question on the criteria that was unclear from the staff report, that it's not one of the exceptions, but that it's all of the exceptions would have to apply for a municipality to opt out of it or at this time.
Thank you. Is that a question?
Yes, it is a question. Are you?
No. So it's or, not and. And I verified that. So basically, it's either one of the three criteria waivers that we've enlisted in the bill. It's not all three of them.
So since the staff report indicates a lack of clarity, perhaps there may still be a need for a technical adjustment there on that. So it was the intent is that it's one of those criteria.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, is there public testimony on the bill? Carrie Hebrink from the National Utility Contractors Association of Florida waves in opposition. Juliet Brown from the City of Hallandale waves in opposition, representing herself. Willie Kitcher, representing himself as a solid waste driver, waves in support. Stephen Simon, wastewater treatment operator, representing himself, waves in support. Jacqueline Smith, representing herself, waves in support. Barry Deem, waves in support. Leanne DeRigney, waves in support. Steve Corso, waves in support. Linda Lewis, waves in support. LaTanya Irvin, waves in support. Richard Jones, waves in support. David Jimenez, waves in support. Joanne Alvarez, waves in support. Jose Alavon wishes to speak and is a proponent. Jose Alavon waves in support. Vanessa Alarcon wishes to speak and is a proponent. Do you want to come approach the mic, please? Welcome, all the way from Fort Pierce.
Hi, good morning, Representative and public present. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I just wanted to say that this bill does great things for America. Steel in America is stronger, is better built. It is less susceptible to corrosion. It is built in a manner that is better for the environment, and it will help our infrastructure. Now, as a mother, when I buy shoes for my kids, I make sure I buy good shoes because they're going to go through it. And when we have infrastructure, we want our infrastructure to last. Any product that we buy that is cheaper is only going to cost us more in the end. So I fully wave in support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alarcon. Jim McGill, Trademark Metal Recycling. Waves in support. Philip Suderman, Americans for Prosperity, wishes to speak. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Philip Suderman. I am the Policy Director with Americans for Prosperity. I'd like to first off by saying thank you so much to the representative for allowing us to have private conversations and voice concerns about this bill. He's been very generous with his time and very generous in terms of talking over his point of view along with our point of view. Unfortunately, I still must come up and oppose this bill just simply because, well, there's quite a few things that we see wrong with it. So government holds a responsibility as a steward of taxpayer dollars. The power of taxation should come in understanding that the money garnered from hardworking taxpayers is put to use in a way that will benefit everyone, in a manner that provides quality while also assuring the least possible expense. Quite simply, government spending comes at a cost to the people. For every dollar spent, that dollar is taken from the people. To needlessly increase government spending is to increase Floridians' cost. So the mandate provided in this bill would do precisely that, driving up costs with no benefit. So let's talk about what this bill won't do. This bill won't control costs. Costs will rise. There's even a provision in the bill noting that carving this out at 20% above total cost of the entire project. That's not the cost overrun of steel, that's the cost overrun for the entire project. And in fact, according to the House analysis, this bill will come with, quote, a significant negative fiscal impact on state and local governments. And to couple with this, inflation is at its highest in 40 years, putting a serious pinch on Floridian taxpayers. In fact, a recent report said that as of January, prices had increased 7.5% compared to the previous January. This isn't about controlling bad actors, as was mentioned previously about China or other potential countries. In fact, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce, the top five importers are Canada, Brazil, Mexico, South Korea, and Japan, accounting for 63% of all total imports of steel. All allies, all democracies, all nations that we deal business with. This bill isn't about safety. Local codes are to be followed regardless of where the steel comes from. There are no different rules for American steel or for non-American steel. They must meet code at the local level or the state level for that steel to be used. And this bill isn't about patriotism, because patriotism is about choosing to do something, not being mandated to do something. And in fact, this bill won't even help American workers. If we wanted to help American workers, we should have a conversation about how to make steel competitive in America. We should have a conversation about what regulations can be replaced, what red tape can be repealed, how we can help that out. Instead, what we're talking about is a handout. It's corporate welfare. It's money from the state directly to an industry, regardless of their quality or their costs. Every dollar the government spends comes from a pocket of a taxpayer. This isn't about any one person's personal ideas of how to spend money. This is about mandating for all Floridians, regardless of their individual financial circumstances. To sum up, this is an anti-free trade, anti-fiscally conservative bill. Government has an obligation to all of us and should be accountable for how it spends its taxpayer dollars. Members of the committee, I respectfully ask for you to oppose this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you for appearing, Mr. Suderman, and giving us your testimony. William H. Burnett wishes to waves in opposition. Deborah Summer wishes to speak at the meeting. Waves in opposition. Okay. Waves in opposition. Linda Z. Watson. Waves in opposition. Dana Gott. Waves in opposition. David J. Meltzer. Waves in opposition. Dr. Rich Templin, Florida AFL-CIO. Dr. Templin, welcome. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's always a pleasure. We've done this a fair amount this session, haven't we? I've been doing this a long time, and, you know, periodically I hear things, and it's like, where'd that come from? We just heard Americans for Prosperity speaking against a bill whose purpose is to increase American prosperity. Any competent public administrator, any competent economist will tell you that when you are engaged in public investments, and that's what public works projects are, they're investments, the responsible thing to do is maximize the bang for the buck. That is the responsibility to the taxpayers, is to ensure that their investments aren't just building a bridge, aren't just building a culvert, that the building of that project actually creates an economic impact in the community. Now, in this case, we're not talking about just a community. We're talking about the United States of America. We're talking about ensuring that every public dollar invested maximizes the overall economic impact to the United States of America. Now, we understand, and any economist will tell you, steel production, as an example, it's a foundation industry. It's a foundation of multiple economic sectors. Every dollar invested in this industry has a ripple effect that goes through the entire economy. So when we talk about, we've got to control costs, we can't have costs, the worst thing you can do is take public dollars and invest in another country, invest in another part of their economic sector that doesn't improve jobs, doesn't pump money back into local cash registers, doesn't pump money back into our schools and everything that we base taxation for. This is a really simple but elegant idea of this requirement. And again, it has opt-out provisions throughout. But this requirement is an elegant way to maximize every dollar that the taxpayers invest to increase jobs, improve infrastructure, and increase overall economic activity nationwide. And you don't have to take my word for it. There are volumes on how investments in our steel industry are good for the entire economy. And just to be clear, I represent tens of thousands of workers who are ready to make this steel. They're ready to make it better than anyone else in the world, and they're ready to take every dollar they make and invest it back in this country. Please support this great legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Templin. I have a question for you. So you represent the AFL-CIO.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know how many unionized plants we have in Florida that are involved in steel fabrication and who owns them?
We have facilities that are unionized here in the state of Florida that take the raw product and convert it into other products. But to the best of my knowledge, we have no steel fabrication in the state of Florida.
Steel, they take a product and make it into something else. They melt it. Is that what you mean by when you say that? We have nobody doing that now in the state of Florida?
No, ma'am. What I'm saying is that we take the raw material steel.
The scrap.
No. Okay. Steel is ordered, okay. Comes to Florida, is then manufactured into a usable good as opposed to steel itself.
Does this bill address, allow all of those companies to operate? Because this is a melt product, simply just melt. Would it exclude any of the companies that you represent?
Not to the best of my knowledge, no. And again, we have heard unanimously from our steelworkers, our machinists, and others that they support this legislation, which is why we're here.
So does it eliminate cold, like rolled steel, steel that's made from slab from competing for government work, U.S. fabricated steel that comes from steel slab?
Not to the best of my knowledge, no.
Well, my understanding is it does, because the language in this is for only entities that melt the steel. And I recognize they dominate the industry, and is the fastest growing part. It's grown tremendously since 1983. Nucor has grown tremendously since 1983. But my understanding is it does exclude certain companies that also make steel, make products from steel. But because of the language of this bill, it would exclude them from competing. And I wondered if that might be a concern for you.
We can certainly, it's hard to make please. Sure you recognize no, by the chair I, when you you're when you're like, conversing
no,
with the chair.
I am, please.
We'll certainly look into that. But again, this legislation from its filing has been met with a lot of excitement and interest from our membership. I think that there are folks in the room that can speak more directly to that portion. Again, my comments are more macroeconomic in general, and talking about the overall positive economic impact on the state of Florida and the country.
It's certainly exciting that we are able to take scrap and turn it into products and use them in the state of Florida. It is a very exciting process. Thank you very much, Dr. Templin.
Thank you.
Chris Keffler from EBAA Iron from Austin, Texas. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee. It's an honor to be here today. My name is Chris Keffer. I'm here representing my family's iron foundry, EBA Iron. We make ductile iron products for the wastewater industry. And again, it's an honor to be here. I'd like to thank Representative Rodriguez for filing this bill and being a leader on this issue. We believe that HB 619 was smartly mirrored after existing federal statutes that were first adopted in 1933 and have been expanded to other federal programs like the federal DOT's Buy America and the EPA's American Iron and Steel requirements. For almost 100 years, both sides of the aisle in D.C. have supported these measures and continue to include them in most, if not all, infrastructure packages and appropriations bills, including the most recently passed by Presidents Trump and Biden. It has always been a bipartisan approach to encourage investment in domestic production of iron and steel and to support a local economy and domestic economy. I also understand that there are concerns, hypothetical concerns, that these policies can raise the overall cost of a project. Well, thankfully, we have history to show us that that is certainly not the case. In fact, after the Recovery Act, which had these exact same requirements, there was data that showed, and it was in testimony from the GAO and Congress, that it simply didn't raise the cost of projects. In fact, they were able to do more projects with less money, and actually the construction materials, the iron and steel products that had to be domestic, were actually underpriced or less than anticipated costs. So we actually have history to look at that these are not the case. We also have, you know, just in case there is a situation where it might raise the cost of a project, you have waivers that are intact. And these are exact same waivers that exist on the federal level that will be included in this bill. And so entities have the ability, in the instance that if it were to raise costs, they can seek an exemption, or if it's not in the best public interest, which is a very broad exemption or waiver to seek. And so that's up to the discretion of the governing body that, okay, this is raising the cost of the project, we can waive this. So these safeguards do exist, and they do exist on the federal level, and they have existed on the federal level for decades and decades. So these policies do work. They are workable policies. The infrastructure industries that exist in Florida already comply with these policies anytime they receive federal dollars for roads, bridges, water infrastructure. So these are workable policies that the contractors, the distributors, the engineers know how to use and know how to comply with. I can speak to a little bit to the definition of the manufacturing process. The genesis of this, and again, this is the exact same definition that exists on the federal level. And so what this tries to capture is that they want all processes to be done in the United States. So from melting, finishing, coating, fabricating, assembly, packaging, all that to be done in the United States. And the reason for that is, you know, there were problems, loopholes in previous definitions that allowed for just simply fabricating or simply just assembly in the United States and calling that made in the United States. So what this definition does, and again, this is a tested, proven definition on the federal level and in other states, that requires all processes from initial melting all the way through final assembly, coating, packaging to be done in the United States, and that means made in the United States. So that's what the definition is accomplishing with that. But again, we support this. These policies are proven, they are workable, and we certainly urge you to support House Bill 619.
I really appreciate you being here, and I want to ask you a question.
Yes, ma'am.
You make your steel from in your foundry?
Iron products, yes,
iron
ma'am.
Products. You make your iron products from scrap materials?
Correct.
Where do you obtain the scrap materials from?
So typically, and I can only speak for iron foundries, not on the steel side, so it's from scrap dealers, and typically scrap dealers mostly from, we have several foundries, but most of those scrap dealers are within 100 miles of our facility. So that is another peripheral local entity that benefits from a robust manufacturing base.
Do you know if any of your scrap is imported from other countries or if it's all domestic?
So, and it's a great question. And that's why the definition starts at the melting process, because you really can't, there is no way to determine where scrap comes from. I mean, even the scrap dealer has no idea really where. We have tons and tons of scrap delivered to us. So that's why the definition starts at melting process, because there's literally no way to just determine where that initial input of the product comes from. And honestly, too, that's why the domestic melt and pour starts, because that's where the new product starts. That's where the quality control starts. And so the initial inputs, while we would love for them to be from domestic, they are sourced from domestic providers. But as far as the source of the initial scrap, we can't.
For the members, you could explain easily why we don't make it. This is not all locally sourced, in addition to not being able to identify where the scrap comes from, why we no longer see virgin steel produced from ore mined in the United States.
Well,
or very little. I shouldn't say none, but less.
Well, policies like this will encourage that to happen. So, I mean, that's why, you know, we have seen an increase in domestic production because of these policies. Obviously, we went through a pandemic where, you know, sourcing non-domestic materials, not just iron and steel, was a problem. So, I mean, this is a policy that will encourage more of that production, certainly.
My understanding was that that's more debate. I will leave that for debate. I really appreciate you being here and sharing about your electric arc furnace factory. Is that correct? Thank you so much for coming all the way from Austin to share that with us.
Thank you very much.
Willie DeBerry from Vero Beach waves in support. Are you here, William? Thank you. Thank you for being here from Vero Beach. All right. We did the public testimony debate. We're on to debate on the bill. Representative Higgins, you're recognized. Henson, I'm sorry. Representative Henson. Thank you. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Rodriguez. I've heard this bill three times. This is my third time. I know you know that, and I've supported it each time. But today, we have a lot more interest in it than we've had at the other stops. I believe there's no better time as this to put America back to work. At 20%, 30%. It's a small cost to ensure a quality American product, not only to invest in our infrastructure, but be able to rely on our infrastructure not to collapse. I think it's a small investment to pay for that safety and security and knowledge and knowing what we have that we can actually live in. Drive our cars across, run our water through. I also believe, and I don't know why there's so many people here that are opposed to it. I wish we could have heard, instead of waved in support, heard their opposition other than Americans for Prosperity. But I do believe this will expand the industry. I think it will not only expand the industry in what I remember as Pittsburgh Steel. You may not know that, but back in the day, it was Pittsburgh where we got steel. However, I believe it might expand the industry to Florida because we have a lot of infrastructure products and projects about to go out. So you're going to have my support again. I think it's a great project. And I think before I told you about some of the nightmares for importing products from other countries and what has happened to them, because we needed products that we could not get after hurricanes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, it would be good to hear why you seem to be a little bit reluctant as well.
I will have a chance to discuss my concerns in debate.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Robinson. You're recognized.
I just wanted to thank you, Representative, for bringing this good bill. I won't repeat everything that my colleague has said, but I truly believe that this is really good for not only industry, but for the people. And so thank you for bringing it. And especially during the time when we are putting so much money back into our infrastructure, I definitely believe we should keep it on.
Thank you. Is there any other debate? Representative Duggan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I actually have a steel rebar production facility in my district. So I'm going to give you a little bit about the ecosystem here because we've had a lot of testimony and questions about that. The scrap that comes to this facility, first of all, let me back up. This facility, when I was last out there, which was pre-pandemic, employed over 300 people on three shifts, 24 hours a day. They bring in scrap, they smelt it, and they turn it into steel rebar that shows up in mostly construction projects from that facility. But the scrap that shows up there comes from, as was testified by the gentleman from Texas, comes from scrap yards within about a 100-mile radius. And for those of you who don't know this, most of those scrap yards are sourced, the material in the scrap yards are sourced by oftentimes by the working poor who go out into neighborhoods and collect consumer products that, you know, most of the rest of us put out on the curb, Oftentimes, these are people who don't have bank accounts because they can't be banked. So the scrapyard provides an important economic means of self-support for them. They're often, you know, not necessarily on public support. They've found a way to monetize what we throw away, and it goes to the scrapyard. The scrapyard then sends it to the steelyard. This isn't scrap we're importing from somewhere else. This is the stuff we throw away. It goes to the production facility and gets turned into rebar. So that facility supports not just the people who work there. It supports that entire ecosystem that I've just described. We've heard today from folks in opposition to the bill about well, we were encouraged to reject the patriotism argument and reject the safety argument. So I'll take them at their word, and I'll focus just on the cost to the taxpayer argument. We heard about the cost to the people. We heard about increased government spending. We heard the word handout. And we heard that it is an anti-fiscally conservative bill. Now, this same organization, just as an example, supports apprenticeship legislation, as they should. We in the state need to do a lot more about creating opportunities for people to find a meaningful trade, a life skill that can support themselves, and get good jobs, what we used to call the American dream. You could graduate from high school, get a good job, support yourself, support your family, live comfortably. I think we all know that has been severely stressed in the last several decades. But we in Florida are trying to get back to that by our emphasis on apprenticeship training, career technical education. We're leaders in that. Well, I'm a little perplexed that an organization that would support that approach about creating apprenticeships into good manufacturing jobs or other skilled trades would be against this bill. Because as we heard, it's not just about producing the steel. It's about all the trades that take the steel and do something with it. And those apprenticeship programs send people into those industries as well. Being against this bill ultimately could lead to social spending costs going up if American workers are disadvantaged. And if they lose their jobs or they can't get good jobs, social spending is going to have to go up. You've got the first order spending of actually supporting that person. You've got the second and third order spending of mental health costs, lost productivity, increased incarceration costs. That is an increased burden to the taxpayer, which is what we heard was what we should focus on. And furthermore, when people lose these good quality jobs or can't get them, communities hollow out. Main streets die. That also has an increased cost to the taxpayer. So I submit to you that the fiscally conservative option here is to support this bill, which is going to lead to the creation of good jobs here in America. It's going to prosper Americans. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Duggan. Is there any other members wishing to debate? Representative G. Lombardo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Rodriguez, thank you for the healthy debate on it and the conversation back and forth. And I just got to speak yesterday with all the stakeholders that are, supporting this bill. I addressed my concerns. I was up on it last committee, pending our conversations and our current concerns that they weren't met. So I'm going to have to be down at today. And I'm just going to just kind of leave with a couple of things. You know, right now, earlier we heard that this is going to spark new, iron industry and the steel industry. That industry in Minnesota, extracting the iron ore from mines, is overregulated. And in the state of Florida, unfortunately, we can't undo that regulation because it's a lot of it's federal. I'm concerned about the cost, concerned about the supply issues right now. I have builders daily contacting me. We can't get enough. They're bouncing back and forth from lumber to metal studs and, trying to figure out the best and cheapest price because housing is going through the roof. And then I look at and I bring it back home to my district. And I don't have a steel plant in your district. And I certainly absolutely don't disagree. They produce jobs. But I look back and, my district's not going to, financially, there's not going to be any jobs in my district. It's just going to cost my constituents when it comes to public works projects, and we have a ton of them with all the, well, all the projects that we have for the wastewater and all, you know, all the different things that we're doing right now. So I certainly appreciate the dialogue. I'm still going to communicate with you because I see it the next stop too. You know, if we can work on some things, I'd be happy to be up on it next time. But today I'm down, and I apologize.
Vice Chair Maggard, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Rob. We've had plenty of conversation about this, and I love you to death, and I appreciate the thought and sentiment. And I agree wholeheartedly with Representative Duggan on his thought. But at the end of the day, I'm a free market freedom guy. We have the right in this country to choose. And that is probably the pro-American side of this, that we have the option to do that. We are open to do business where we want to. When we go into a store, we have a choice to buy American or buy somewhere else. That is our option. And we take away that option with mandates, I think we are doing our freedom a disservice, because now we are forcing somebody to buy something, whoever it may be. Right now, it's pro-America still, which is great. But what if it's something else tomorrow? The free market works. And hopefully this bill will change before it gets to the floor. But I cannot support it at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Maggard. Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this bill forward. You know, it's just too hard, I think. It's just too hard that we can't. I think that's what they said when, you know, when oil and gas production were overseas. And it was just too hard to bring that here. And yet somehow we did it. And somehow we brought that oil and gas production here to the United States, got past all the regulations. We got to a point where we were actually energy independent, but it was too hard. But we got there, and we did it. Our gas prices, our heating prices, our overall industry, those prices dropped incredibly. Currently, we've seen an investment in overseas materials and overseas gas production, and we've cut off our U.S. production base. What's happened? Well, there was a conversation here earlier where our inflation has now gone up 7.5%. I mean, you can tie it directly back to the cost that each and every single person in this room has to pay every day for your energy. And now we're investing our energy costs overseas in other places. We aren't having that same investment here anymore. You know, my grandfather, Grandpa Ted, worked at a Bethlehem Steel. My other grandfather worked for Republic Steel in Buffalo, one in Bethlehem, one in Buffalo. My dad worked at Bethlehem Steel as well. Those investments that we made post-World War II were there. In fact, during World War II, that's what kept my one grandfather home, was that investment in the United States Steel. But it's just too hard to keep it here, apparently. And what we need is a disruptor. In order to create change, we need disruptors. We need to change the patterns of procurement to change. We need a disruptor. This bill is a disruptor. It has the potential to change procurement patterns and to shift the focus of that 14th largest economy in the world that we know is Florida and shift that production back to the United States. I fully support this disruptor, and I look forward to not only supporting it here, but supporting it on the floor and seeing it signed into law. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative McCurdy wants to get in on some of that. All right, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. I'll be very brief. Representative Rodriguez, I think this is a good bill. I'll be up on this bill. It's the second time I've heard it. And I just want to point out that this bill requires governmental entities entering contracts of public works projects. It's not for individuals building, you know, their own homes or have their other businesses that are outside of government, governmental entities. The other thing I'll say that I think is very important that we encourage people to buy American. And two words that I've heard from in opposition of this bill were options and choices, which I think is very interesting, and I hope that we keep that energy throughout the rest of the day. Thank you.
thank you. Seeing no further debate, I have a few comments I want to make about the bill. Buy American is great. I love steel. We love American-made products, and having the ability to fabricate and manipulate steel from scrap is a great opportunity for us. In Florida, people pay to buy stuff. They bring it here. Now we don't have ore, but we have scrap, and that's a great thing. And I'm really grateful you brought this bill because I've learned so much about the steel industry. But I am concerned about a few things about the bill. And one of them is that I need to understand there's very similar processes that also use steel, some of it scrap from other places, as a fairly raw material, and they process it in a lower heat environment, which may be appropriate for some of our infrastructure projects. And because we're using the definition of Made in America from the Made in American Act and not the Made in America Act from 1933, some of those entities are excluded. And I want to make sure that we aren't picking winners and losers among our American makers. I think that by far the entities that do the full melt, these mini mills, are by far the leader. And 10 years from now, they may be all that's left if the others can't compete. But I don't want to pick winners and losers, especially among our American people that are working, that are also, I understand, some of them unionized, some of them non-unionized shops. And when I look at the mini mill distribution, Florida has very few, but we have more iron and steel secondary finishing places that might be using the rolled steel, for example. And I think that it's important that we at least have the competition that we indicated. I also see Nucor, who came to see me about this, has clocked in their record financial performance in 2021, so they're doing very well, and I'm thrilled for them because that means more investment. It's working. The price of scrap is going up, though, and I am grateful that smashed cars aren't being sent to other countries where we are exporting our steel, that we're capturing it here and using it. I don't want to say I'm so pleased for that. I do hear that the industry is very competitive. We are in an inflationary period. I know that energy has to be a big part of the equation because you're melting the steel. So we could see some inflation, and there might be some leveling out. I would like to see if this bill, as this bill progresses, that we would have accountability for the amount of the subsidy, some clarity as to who gets to decide what's in the public interest. Apparently there is some clarity in the federal bill about that it's the procurement officer. When people say they're willing to pay 25 or 30% more for the entire project for the steel, which may be a 5 to 7% component, they need to recognize that that may be saying we're doing less projects. So I would like to see a consideration of 10 to 20 as a cap of 10 to 20% actually on the steel component materials. I think that's a fair subsidy, and from what I've been told, you are able to compete well within that. There are other ways that we could look at how we ensure that these American processes, this vital ability to manipulate semi-raw materials into usable, transform it into usable goods in America, that skill is vital. And it was vital in World War II. These are concerns. When a bill comes to the Appropriation Committee and has a significant, indeterminate, negative impact, constitutional concerns and drafting concerns, I have to say, I don't think this bill is ready yet. I do have some serious concerns that I would like to see resolved, but I am excited about the investment that is being brought to Florida. I'm grateful for all the members that were here when we voted to give equipment that's used in manufacturing a sales tax exemption. I am grateful for the, you know, the money, which I can't get a number on, but at the federal level, there is the Buy America subsidy. There is also going to be a protection, I should say, in the, I think it's 1.3, is it trillion? I guess it is trillion. They use such big numbers up there, $1.3 trillion infrastructure bill. So you guys are going to have, there's going to be a lot of work coming your way, a lot of opportunity for work. So with so few mills in Florida, I am concerned about the economic impact on us. When I look at the density of many mills, it's in other states. So I'm a little concerned at how that goes. I think we have one or two here, maybe three, and I'm not sure what, one of them does rebar. And I understand there's some flexibility. I spoke to them. They said they do different products, that it is a made, on an individual basis. There's also a need to clarify about that it's an or, not an and, make sure that we got that language straight. So those are just a few of my concerns, but it's certainly not a concern about buying American or American manufacturing. I shared with you that we have a aluminum fabricator that similarly takes scrap and melts it into ingots, I guess, or bars. That's now available and allows an entire group of manufacturers to compete in Northeast Florida, not just in St. John's County. So it's really important to have that raw material here and capture it and process it. So I'm going to support the bill, but I wanted to be sure and explain to you that I do have some concerns as this bill continues to progress. All right? And I appreciate you bringing it. It's been a real education. So, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, colleagues. I usually waive close when I present bills, but I'll just elaborate a little bit and address some things I've heard throughout these concerns and public testimony, both in favor and against the bill. First of all, I encourage all my colleagues in support of this that spoke so strongly on this to right now give the directive to your aides to go and co-sponsor this bill, okay? But talking a little more serious, let's not forget what the intent of this bill is, what this bill would really do. It's very simple. Buy American, keep jobs in America, and we have very strong allies in other countries, which we need to preserve, and we are preserving. It is proven. This has been at the federal level for years, decades. It has not harmed or hurt those relationships. There's other states that have passed similar legislation or identical legislation, and it has not burdened those relationships. But we must prioritize America and the state of Florida. And that is one of the things that we're doing in this bill. I heard concerns from some of my colleagues who we have had several dialogue. But I have to disagree, respectfully. Rep, you mentioned, that there's a mill that we can't control and is overregulated. And my history, my voting record will show that I am anti-overregulation to another level. But when it comes to the safety of our residents, I'd rather have overregulation in another state than no regulation overseas. Because this is the steel that is supporting our buildings, our infrastructure, and the safety of our community. I know that your district is not personally impacted by this, but remember, while we're voted by our districts, you ran for the Florida House of Representatives. Your vote is for the safety and the benefit of all Floridians, not just our districts. And that's something I remind myself of all the time. Because we're voted by districts, but we represent, and our vote impacts the entire state of Florida up here. We heard about free market. Again, look at my voting record. Very free market. I made almost
100% of the time. But we do have a fiduciary responsibility for the safety of Floridians. And while free market is important, and this does not impede on free market at all, this so-called mandate that has been tossed around, it's not really a mandate. And if you want to call it a mandate, it's a mandate on us, on government. You know, one of my colleagues brought up a very good point. This is not impacting the private sector. This does not impact that homeowner that wants to build their own home, as was stated in that example. This is for public works projects only, which, by the way, is already being done with certain agencies right here in the state of Florida. FDOT already implements this, has been implementing this for years, following federal guidelines. We are just mirroring that and making it across the board for the entire state of Florida. That being said, there was also a fiscal impact that was just added in this committee by staff. And I don't know where staff got that fiscal impact from or how supported it is or not. But there is two reports that I've seen, two studies that I've seen. A federal study by the GAO, which was referenced by Mr. Keffer, and some state study, specifically in the state of Texas. Both studies have stated that there is no fiscal impact in this bill. And proven fiscal impacts. These studies were done after legislation had been passed in the state and federally. Now, let's say that this was to increase costs by less than the 20% margin that we've instilled in this bill. Colleagues, there is a waiver here, which is very clear and very broad intentionally, called the public interest waiver. What does that mean? That means you could drive a truck through it. And anything that is not in the best interest of the public, you can argue a waiver for and request a waiver for that product. And that public interest could be price, much less than 20%. And I didn't want to come up here and say that and give anybody ideas, any state agencies ideas. But that is a fact. So we have included certain precautions, certain guardrails in this bill to protect Floridians both fiscally, financially, and the safety of all Floridians. And with that, colleagues, I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Rodriguez. Having closed on his bill, Michelle, will you please call the roll?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
No.
Ranking Member Golf Marcio?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher? Gilombardo?
No.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
12 yeas, 2 nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll show this bill reported favorably without amendment. Our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative McCurdy moves we rise. And with that, we are adjourned.
Just want to make sure.
Thank you.